Hello and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review, and we're recording from the studio of WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Dr. John Bruchalski, author of Two Patients, My Conversion from Abortion to Life-Affirming Medicine. John, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Oh, Johnny, it's good to be with you.
John, you were once a doctor who performed abortions, but what happened to you one night in 1989 in Norfolk, Virginia, in the hospital delivery room?
Because of a mother's desires, in one room, I was caring for she and her child, and I was doing everything I could to save the baby, keep it inside, do everything I could medically. In the other room, right across the 6-inch wall, in the next room, the mom did not want the baby at the same age with the same problem, so therefore I aborted it. I broke the water, gave her medicine, and delivered the child. I almost suffocated the child with a towel, with a cloth, but I felt a little heavy, so I threw it on a scale, and lo and behold, it was over 500 grams, and I had to call in the neonatal intensivists. And this incredible doctor walked in, this neonatal intensive care doctor, Dr. Debbie Plum, and she said, "Hey, John, why are you treating my patients as tumors? Have coffee with me tomorrow." And I was shocked. Not only did I have cognitive dissonance, but at this point, she was beginning to question my medical reasoning.
Why did that moment strike you so much? You'd been performing abortions for some time, I gather.
Yes, I was the first 2 years of my residency, but John, what happens when you grow up in a great home that's both incredibly principled, constitutional, faithful? Faith and reason were together. It wasn't a paradox. Science and reason and science and faith, they go together. Well, that was planted in me as a young man, but because of education, I lost my way. I became lukewarm. And when mercy becomes unmoored from truth and justice, it leads to the gas chamber, like Flannery O'Connor said in the 50s and 60s, and now it's leading to the abortionist or the clinic in the year 2022. I had a foundation where the way of medicine was about healing, trusting, collaboration, and here I was being challenged by her. You mean a fetus is a member of the human family and it's a member of patient care? Maybe as an OB, I should have been caring for two patients, not just one, and only one when the mother wanted it.
Is this what you're trained to believe in medical school, that unborn children, fetuses, whatever you want to call them, are like tumors?
Well, of course. Children are sexually transmitted diseases. The way of medicine has been co-opted bioethically with the primary foundation of patient autonomy. And I become a vending machine, meaning the mother wants or doesn't want whatever hell she wants, and you then have to provide access to her desire. There's no attempt at professional autonomy, and conscience just becomes nothing more than a feeling, a good feeling that you pat yourself on at night. And oh, by the way, your conscience is your conscience. You keep it to yourself. So they've privatized conscience, and they have relativized human life.
So what happened after that experience when this doctor said, "Don't treat my patients like tumors," and you met her to have a conversation? What's the next part of the story?
Yeah, sure. So she says, "John, you're better than this. We see how your patients line up for you. You listen to them. You really care for them. You treat the wealthy and the poor alike. We just think you're one of our best residents, but a few of us really think that you need to kind of beef up and kind of really examine your conscience." So she says, "Hey, man, I just got back from a place called Medjugorje in Yugoslavia. Why don't you go there? I found myself. I really found a firm foundation." 2 days later, my mother said the same thing. "I was not interested, but I went because of what my mom asked. And while I was there in prayer, I realized that faith and reason were together because I had a prayerful experience of the mercy of God, the mercy of Jesus Christ." and the data that I was beginning to read at school with abortion and breast cancer, abortion and preterm labor, abortion and mental illness, abortion and suicide, that data became real to me. I began to see, maybe this ain't the best thing for people. Maybe this is not liberating and freeing. This is not real choice, because we weren't giving anybody choice. We were just convincing them that the way to end suffering and the way to end your problems, the way to end your pain, is abortion. And I was engaging experientially that my patients were saying, oh, no, 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 the pain and the suffering all came before the abortion, and the abortion just compounds it. It doesn't, it hardens the mother's heart. She becomes a woman with rights rather than a mother with a child. And I began to see, as I came off that hill, buddy, my life just came in focus, and I touched the mercy of God. And because I saw myself now as hurting the least of my brothers and sisters, I found myself in a place that His mercy enabled me to see some truths that I could really help myself, because my heart was becoming hardened, Johnny, but my patients' hearts also could be helped. And so I came off the that hill really wanting to do a way of medicine that really was Hippocratic, not hypocritical. What we're doing now is an abomination, because we're bastardizing words. We are literally polluting the healing profession based on access and health care. Medicine has become health care. Patients have become clients. They've become consumers.
Now, you've, I'm sure, encountered some really hard cases across your career. Women in vulnerable positions, abandoned by men. What do you say to them when they come to you in distress?
It's very simple. It's basically saying to them that you are in a very difficult situation, but I can help you come aside women who have been through what you've been through and have come out the other side healthy and whole. I used to do abortions, so I cannot go there with you. I can't do that, because I have found that to be not the best choice for you. So because I care about your health and happiness, I will come alongside you, and I will connect you with people who will come alongside you and help you get through this. Most women in that situation believe abortion is their least worst option. They were stupid enough to get pregnant. They were stupid enough to be in a bad relationship. They're shamed. Well, the only way to overcome shame is with caring and love. And what I then say is, no matter what you do or what you choose, whether you follow my directions or not, you are welcome back here at our office. No judgment. And because they're going to tell you, go to the nearest emergency room. Go to someone else rather than us to follow up with. It's in that moment that when I'm connected, when the doctor is connected with pregnancy centers and pregnancy resource and community options, as well as the churches, well, all of a sudden you provide a community with the resources where abortion becomes unwanted and children can be welcomed either in her family or in someone else's family.
We're having this conversation shortly before the midterm elections of 2022, and abortion is on the minds of many voters because of the Dobbs decision. What advice do you have regarding policy, maybe for voters who are on the fence? They have misgivings about abortion, but they also worry about women in vulnerable positions.
Their word vulnerable means life-threatening conditions of the mother. I can tell you now, with my conversations with high-risk OBGYNs who have cared for these patients, there is almost zero opportunities, because medicine has, for 50 years, medicine has progressed since Roe. We now are able to get moms and babies, care for both. Don't pit mom against babies. Don't pit moms against their unborn life. Don't pit moms against the fetus. You can actually care for both far enough to get them to health, to viability, to life. Now, in those rare, rare cases where we have to deliver the baby early, we absolutely are able to treat the disease, we never, ever, as a life-affirming doctor, ever go after the child. We never have to kill the child to save the mom's life. We may have to treat the disease, and sometimes the child is a part of that treatment, but we're always targeting. It's never our intent or the medicine that says you got to kill the unborn to save mom. So medicine has advanced, and I can just tell the policymakers that there are many, many good maternal fetal medicine specialists who also agree with that, despite the other side saying, no, no, you have to have abortion in order to save the mom's life. I really think that's another lie.
One more question. You remain an OBGYN doctor in Virginia. How can listeners learn more about what you do?
The practice that I'm a part of is tepiacobgyn.com. But I'm now president of Divine Mercy Care. We are a not-for-profit. We raise alms to care for that delta, to show that we care for the least of our sisters by caring for them in the same situation where we have a senator with alongside someone who's living out of her car. So we raise alms for that practice, but we also are now educating and inspiring and just having conversations with medical students, college students, residents, and other doctors who have been burned out or they're just sick and tired of how the way of medicine has been perverted. And so that's at divinemercycare.org, or they can read about this book that I have at twopatients.com.
The author is Dr. John Bruchalski. The book is Two Patients, My Conversion from Abortion to Life-Affirming Medicine. John, thanks for joining us on The Bookmonger.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thanks to all of you for listening. Before you go, I'd like to tell you about National Review Plus. With NR Plus, you get unlimited access to National Review's digital magazine. That means no paywall, all the issues in the deep archive, and all the podcasts. But this is more than a digital subscription. It's a membership that includes access to our members-only Facebook page, members-only conference calls with NR writers, editors, and guests, members-only commenting on the site, and a lot fewer ads, including none with an article. To learn more, search for National Review Plus and sign up. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.